Blog Talk Radio.
Mode One.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
Anytime you find yourself in a romantic relationship with a man or woman who turns out to be immature, irresponsible, selfish, or just plain irritating, attempting to deal with and or tolerate this person's flaws, weaknesses, and not so desirable qualities can prove to be challenging and stressful. Now, let's take the situation a few steps further. Let's say weeks or months into your new relationship or into your marriage, you find that your companion or spouse is exhibiting behavior that is not only bothersome, but even more so, they're exhibiting behavior that causes you to question if they're functioning with all of their intellectual and emotional faculties in place. For example, have you ever had a companion or spouse that constantly threw temper tantrums for no valid reason? Have you ever had a companion or spouse give you a dead-eye stare that scared you to the point where you thought they wanted to possibly harm you or kill you? Have you caught a companion or spouse in lie after lie after lie or infidelity after infidelity after infidelity? Have you noticed that your companion or spouse doesn't really have too many close friends or long-term friends? If you answered yes to all of the aforementioned questions, there is a greater than 50% chance that your current companion or spouse is mentally and or emotionally unstable. In layman's terms, that person is crazy. When a companion of yours or spouse of yours is unhinged, this means that they do not evaluate their own behavior or the behavior of others in a manner that is objective, logical, reasonable, or rational. Their sense of empathy and regret is practically non-existent, and their moral compass, which should be directing their sense of right versus wrong, is dreadfully distorted. There are many types of cold, calculating manipulators in society, but for the purposes of tonight's discussion, we are going to focus on three categories of crazy companions: romantic con artists, romantic psychopaths, and romantic sociopaths. All three categories share a good number of similarities and attributes, but there are a few minor characteristics that distinguish one group of deceitful, manipulative companions from the next. My guest this evening was married to a man who she thought was initially her soulmate, only to find out later that her beloved husband was a romantic con artist and sociopath who built her out of thousands and thousands of dollars. She took the wisdom gained from her unfortunate experience and turned it into a manual that is designed to help other men and women be on the lookout for these three various types of unremorseful manipulators. Who is this woman who is willing to open up about having her heart shattered and being blatantly manipulated in a manner that left her feeling hurt and humiliated? Her name is Ms. Donna Anderson, and tonight Ms. Anderson is going to help my listening audience avoid embracing and enabling crazy cuckoo companions as she chooses to get upfront and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my God, oh my God, is this Alan Roger Curry of Mode One fame? Oh my God,
you're really good at this.
Gotta ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in a race? You do.
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about
white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect a woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo! Mode 1! This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago Tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode 1, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, February 10th, and tonight's discussion is about something that is very, very serious to those who have experienced it firsthand, and that would be the situation where you're in a relationship, either on the verge of being in a relationship with someone, or more importantly, you are in a relationship with someone who is at minimum a pathological liar and master manipulator, and at maximum someone who is mentally and emotionally unstable. If you remember, my loyal listeners will remember about a year ago, I did a show specifically about personality disorders, such as borderline personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder. There's actually 11 major personality disorders that various men and women suffer from. And there's a few others. There's a number of different persons. There's manic depressive. There's some people who suffer from bipolar disorder. Now, some people, you know, when they're at, say, a party or social event, they tend to use the term crazy very loosely. Like, I've heard women say, yeah, I used to date this guy, and, you know, he used to eat fried chicken with his cereal. He was crazy. See, that ain't crazy. That's just eccentric. You know, there's some people who are just eccentric, meaning that they have habits or quirks that are very unique and different from the quote-unquote average person. Crazy and eccentric are not the same thing. Crazy is when you literally have some type of mental or emotional imbalance. You're not working with a full deck, as they would say. So here's the thing. I got to tell you, my disclaimer, I'm not an expert in psychology. I don't have a degree in psychology, but I have taken psychology classes in college, and it's always been a subject that's been interesting to me. But anyway, what I was going to say is, in a nutshell, one of the ways you can distinguish between crazy people and, say, normal people is that normal people
we have different impulses that float through our head, but we have, for lack of a better term, a moral center to us. We have this little voice that tells us what's right, what's wrong, what's appropriate, what's inappropriate, what's legal, what's illegal, etc. Crazy people don't have that. They're not working with that type of moral compass or moral center. They don't really, a lot of their behavior just operates on those impulses, on a lot of emotionally driven impulses. And they don't have any sense of empathy like a normal person does. They don't have a sense of regret or remorse like a normal person does. That's what makes them crazy. So it's going to be an interesting discussion tonight with my guests. And yeah, you know, I would say in my adult life, I probably dated or generally interacted with probably at least 6, 7, 8 women who I would say were, to one degree or another, mentally unbalanced. If they weren't crazy, at minimum, again, they were extremely manipulative. I think in worst case scenarios, dealing with a crazy companion can lead to physical harm and injury and sometimes death. I think all of us have heard at least a handful of stories through the media where some man just killed his wife or killed his wife and kids, or a woman did something crazy, like cut off her husband's penis or something. So those are your worst case scenarios of dealing with a crazy companion. At minimum, a con artist, a psychopath, a sociopath is going to leave you feeling very bitter, hurt, frustrated, and humiliated. And that's what we're going to get into, is how to identify these crazy companions, as well as what are some of the effects that they tend to have on the men and women that they're in relationships with. Now, next week, I won't be having a show. I won't be having a show next week, a live show. I will be uploading a new episode, though, of the Erotic Conversationalist. I will be uploading an episode of the Erotic Conversationalist, which is my, for those who don't know, I do a secondary spinoff show that's pre-recorded. It's called the Erotic Conversationalist, where I interview exclusively female guests about any subject that relates to sex. And for this episode, I interviewed a woman who goes by the name Nikki True. She has a very popular blog that features very triple X-rated erotica stories. And she and I had a great conversation that featured, I guess what you could say was a happy ending for both of us. Wink, wink. Then 2 weeks from now, I will have a sociologist, writer, and sexologist by the name of Dr. Carol Queen. Dr. Carol Queen, she will be joining me 2 weeks from tonight, and that should be a great conversation. Now, I love all my listeners. I love all my listeners, but I particularly love my chat room listeners. Let me give some chat room love. Hypert, where you been, man? I ain't seen Hypert in a while. Matter of fact, I always refer to Hypert as my number one most loyal listener. But Adrian, who's my 1B listener, she says she's going to challenge you for that, man. She wants to be the number one listener because Hypert is 1A, Adrian's 1B. But I don't know, I might have to switch because, Hyper, you've been gone for like about 3-4 weeks, man. What's been up, man? But anyway, I'm glad to see you. I got Adrian, my buddy from Columbus. She keeps sending me these emails talking about how Columbus is just number one in everything. They ain't number one in chicken wing eating. I know that. That's right. My household is number one in chicken wing eating, but Columbus seems to be number one in name a topic, Columbus. Number one in most white tiles in the household, Columbus, Ohio. Number one in most organic milk drink. And number one in condoms sold. And number one in sex toys purchased. Columbus, give it up for Columbus, Ohio. But who else I got in my chat room? I got Christian Davis in my chat room. I got Mickey in my chat room. She has been in my chat room a long time. Me and Mickey go way back. She was one of the Blog Talk Radio early pioneer hosts. She used to have her own show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Her nickname is Cafe LA. I used to love her show. She got a very smooth voice. And, she did a show in, I want to say, 2007, 2008, 2009. Then she got busy with some other priorities. But she's in my chat room. I got London Leesner. I got James C. Jimmy. I got my younger cousin, Hypestyle, Christopher Curry from Detroit. I got Sister in the chat room. Sister. I got 3 Under. I got Big Dog 83. And I got a number of guest in my chat room. Welcome, 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 welcome. And other shout-outs would be my brother and Ace Confidant, Stephen Curry, my cousin, J.P. Jones, at the Ball, Maplewood, New Jersey, Philip Pulliam, and his older brother, Irvin V. Pulliam, the third, EVP3, No Head, a.k.a. Metal Hayes, Vanessa Turner, Edie Lee Harris, Don Calypso. As you know, Green Bay Packers, they won the Super Bowl. Congratulations to them. They beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 31-25. It was a good game. It was a good game. I enjoyed it. Packers are the arch enemies of the Bears, but I was happy for them. You know, they played a great game. Aaron Rodgers, man, he cracks me up. He acts like a brother. I was telling some friends, Aaron Rodgers, man, he kind of walks and talks like a brother. He cracks me up. If you haven't heard, the Egyptian president, Mubarak, I don't know how you pronounce it, Mubarak or Mubarak, he is not stepping down. He said he's going to transfer all his power to his VP, but he said he's not going to step down. What kind of mess is that? What kind of mess is that, man? That's some, man. He need to step down, or somebody need to make him step down. But anyway, Donald Trump may run for president. He said he would keep everyone posted, but he said he wants to run for president. Did you hear about the Republican New York Representative Christopher Lee, who posed for a picture without his shirt on, and he's married and got like two kids? He did it on Craigslist. That's just crazy. I think he might be like a sociopath or something. That's crazy. What government official in their right mind, if they marry, gonna go on Craigslist and send a picture of themselves? That's just stupid. If he's not crazy, he's just incredibly stupid. I read an article that said oral sex has been cited as a cause for an increase in head and throat cancer. What is that about? Man, that's kind of interesting. We're going to get started with my conversation because I want to get going. So we'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Dangerously, and you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
Mode 1.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Alexandra Cunahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
So I'm getting treated for my sex addiction.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310-310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Allen.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Tonight's guest graduated with honors from Syracuse University with a degree in journalism and has been the founder and owner of her own copywriting firm. She was once married to a man by the name of James Alwyn Montgomery, who was from Australia, and over a period of months and years, she ended up realizing that she was in a relationship with a guy who was both a con artist and a romantic sociopath. After divorcing Mr. Montgomery, my guest for the evening took all of her hard learned lessons and created a book that is designed to help other women as well as men quickly and effectively identify when they are potentially in a relationship with someone who is mentally and or emotionally unstable, or at bare minimum, again, a pathological liar and master manipulator. The book is entitled Love Fraud: How Marriage to a Sociopath Fulfilled My Spiritual Plan. And my guest also has a website by the same name, lovefraud.com. She's had that site since, I want to say, 2005, where she provides information and blog entries that center on teaching people how to recognize and recover from relationships with sociopaths. So on behalf of the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and Upfront and Straightforward, listeners, give it up for Miss Donna Anderson. How are you, Miss Anderson?
I'm doing great, and how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm trying to stay warm, Donna. I tell you, it's cold here, and it was like minus five this morning. And
it's cold where I am too, also in New Jersey.
You're in? Okay, yeah, I know it is. But hey, this is just a fascinating topic. And some of my people, I don't know, might find that interesting to call something that deals with these nutty people fascinating. But it is, because I always have told friends that I'm a big movie buff.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never been scared by monster movies or, you know, aliens from another planet. But one thing that does genuinely scare me, or at least makes me wary, is movies about people who are just unhinged. Like, popular example would be Fatal Attraction.
Mm-hmm.
To me, Glenn Close was scarier to me than any monster, because she was just crazy. And you got so many, like The Shining with Jack Nicholson, where he just lofted. And yeah, so this is an interesting subject. Now, I want to ask you, could you briefly tell my listening audience a little bit about your background, like, for example, how you came to first meet your former husband, and when did you kind of see that, you know, he wasn't who he presented himself to be?
Sure. What I can do is, first of all, give a little nutshell of what my story is. Today, I am confident that I can avoid the most destructive people of the human race. But there was a time when I was a walking target. My ex-husband took $250,000 from me. He cheated with at least six different women during our 2.5-year marriage. He had a child with one of these women. And then, 10 days after I left him, he married the mother of the child, and this turned out to be the second time that he committed bigamy. Now, I could not make any sense out of his behavior until I figured out that he was a sociopath. And now, I'm a college-educated journalist, and I didn't know what a sociopath was, so I figured that other people didn't know what a sociopath was either. And that's why I wrote Love Fraud and my website, lovefraud.com, so that other people can learn from my mistakes. Now, one point that I want to make right up front is that sociopaths, when you first meet them, do not act like jerks. I mean, my ex-husband did not seem to be crazy. He presented himself to be this dynamic, successful entrepreneur who was head over heels in love with me. And it wasn't until much later in the relationship, in fact, it wasn't until after I left him, that I really figured out what was going on.
Mm-hmm. And now, was this your idea to write this book, or did like a friend or relative suggest you kind of do it as a form of therapy?
No. As soon as it was my idea, as okay. soon as I realized what the story was or what exactly had happened to me, I knew that I had an important story to tell. I am a journalist, and you know, when somebody rolls over me with a steamroller, I realize that it's a story. So that's what happened. I mean, my ex-husband, when he came into my life, he told me that he was coming to Atlantic City in order to build a new theme park that Donald Trump, who you just mentioned is running for president, had invited him to come to Atlantic City. And he also told me that he had spent 35 years in the military and had won the Victoria Cross, which is Australia's highest military honor, while serving in Vietnam. He told me all kinds of things and actually sent me documentation to prove it. It all turned out to be fabrication, which I really didn't realize until after I left him and found out that he was telling the same thing to multiple other women.
Mm. Interesting, interesting. Now, I want to quickly ask you, because I know the three categories I mentioned in my introduction have a lot of similarities, but based on other things I've read, they have at least a handful of distinct differences. So I want to ask you, what are the primary similarities between a con artist, a psychopath, and a sociopath? And then, though, what are maybe two or three characteristics that are unique to just each category that make them distinguished from the other?
Okay. Well, in all honesty, the answer to that question depends who you ask. Unfortunately, the medical profession has not settled on a description and diagnostic criteria for sociopath and psychopath. And another term that's in use is antisocial personality disorder. Hmm. They're all essentially the same thing. Unfortunately, though, there's like a political battle going on in the mental health field. The people who are research psychologists want to use the term psychopath and use certain criteria for how that's distinguished, whereas the psychiatrists who belong to the American Psychiatric Association use the term antisocial personality disorder, and as a shorthand for that, they call someone a sociopath. They're essentially the same thing, and a con artist is essentially the behavior that one of these people can exhibit. So, in my opinion, the mental health profession is doing the general population a huge disservice by not agreeing on a definition for this disorder and what the criteria are, because unfortunately what happens is the rest of us are just left confused about what this personality disorder is and who qualifies to meet the criteria.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to tell you, based on some stuff I read, I don't know how valid it is, I actually gave some of my listeners and Facebook friends a little quiz over the last 2 days, and I can even get your thoughts. Let me bring it up real quick. I gave three male examples and three female examples, and I asked my listeners to guess which was which was a con artist, which was a sociopath, and which was a psychopath. And here was my description. The first, I'll start with the men. Man number one, A man was married to his wife for 18 years, had two children. Most who knew him said he was a calm, decent man. Then once this man unexpectedly lost his job and found his house on the verge of being foreclosed on, he took a shotgun, killed his boss, killed half his coworkers, came home, killed his family. Number two, over the last 15 years, a handsome bachelor has preferred the company of highly educated, very self-sufficient women. It is rumored that he proposed to five of his ex-girlfriends and is said to be living in a high-priced condominium and driving a Porsche 911 despite having been unemployed for the last 18 months. And man number three, a man proposed to his most recent fiancée after only dating her for 5 weeks, and he is now on the verge of being married for the fourth time. His first marriage lasted 9 months. His second marriage lasted 2.5 years. His last marriage lasted 13 months. His last two marriages took place in less than a year after his divorce from the previous marriage was final. So I'm going to ask you, and I'm sure you would know the answer, which would you say was the con artist, the psychopath, and the sociopath?
I would say that your man number two and three both exhibit the signs of a sociopath. Man number one, that could be depression, you know, something that, you know, that set him off. I mean, he had a reason. He lost his job, and maybe he had other concerns as well, so he came and shot his family. Or that person, you know, you'd have to know more about the circumstances of the incident. If the person also had a history of violence and had been threatening for a long time and then just had finally had an excuse, then that person could be a sociopath as well. The thing that's important to understand is that most people think that a psychopath is a serial killer. In fact, you know, we did some research on love fraud to ask what people thought about their what the terms meant. And 50% of the people who responded, and I had about 1,300 responses to the survey, 50% of the people thought that the word psychopath meant serial killer. And another 35% thought that a sociopath, they didn't understand what the name of that term was. The point is that there's a lot of confusion about the terminology and which person is which. What you need to keep in mind is that none of these people are delusional. And this is really important because, you know, when you use the term crazy, you kind of think of someone who's hearing voices or has lost touch with reality. A sociopath slash psychopath, which either term you want to use, is not delusional. These people know exactly what they're doing. They just don't care who they hurt.
Hmm. Well, the reason how I came up with those examples, and then we can go on, but I just wanted to quickly say, what I had read was that one of the differences was that it said a sociopath, they just can't function with people, period. They just...
No, that's absolutely not true.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, this is another one of the misconceptions, and this is one of the reasons why I kind of have an issue with the mental health profession as a whole, in that, you know, the experts are not being clear on what this disorder is, and so, of course, the rest of us are confused. They use the term antisocial, but what that means is against society, against people. A lot of people tend to think that someone who is antisocial is a hermit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Sociopaths love people. Well, put it this way, they love being around people because mm-hmm. this is how they thrive. They thrive by exploiting people. Sociopaths are extremely personable when you first meet them. They can be charming, they can be charismatic, they can be the life of the party because they look at people as targets, you know, and anytime they see someone, it's an opportunity for them to try and exploit someone to get what they want. So a sociopath slash psychopath, whichever term you use, in fact, on love fraud, my readers have come to refer to him as P slash S slash N slash for psychopath slash sociopath slash narcissist because, you know, the terminology is so confusing, they don't know which one to use. But the point is that they love being around people. You know, these are not people who are generally lacking in social skills. In fact, you know, that's one reason why they're so hard to identify is because...
Well, no, I wasn't suggesting that they didn't have social skills. The difference I was going to say that they had, again, this is all based on just stuff I've read, is that they said the psychopath can go longer appearing normal. Like, for example, they said a sociopath, you're not going to find a sociopath in, like, say, a 15, 20-year marriage. Their signs are going to be outed quicker than the average psychopath. So that was one of the distinctions, at least, that I had read, is that it said psychopaths are the type that would say could be married for 15 years and then just one day they just go on like this two-week stretch where they just do all this crazy shit, whereas sociopath, they're going to have a history of a lot of severed friendships, severed relationships, and theirs tend to result in more short-term. Now, would you say that you know sociopaths who can, say, maintain like a 10, 15, 20-year type relationship?
I have plenty of readers who have been involved with a sociopath for that length of time. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, again, I mean, the issue is that there are people who have different opinions. And some people, I'm sure, said exactly what you're saying. But the point is there is no agreement, you know. So, I mean, somebody may have said something to you, probably some, or may have explained it that way, the way you just explained it. Mm-hmm. And it could very well be someone with a lot of academic credentials or maybe even a therapist who has explained it that way. I have had different psychology professors contact me to tell me that I'm explaining it wrong on love fraud and that, you know, a psychopath is this and a sociopath is that. The bottom line is there is no uniform definition. And this is what's causing so much problem is because we don't even know what to call these people, so how can we possibly educate people to avoid the warning signs if we can't even settle on a name?
Yeah, well, okay, I'm going to use that as a segue. Since you said, I think the most important thing that can come out of this discussion for my listeners is being at a point where you can identify. Now, of course, like you were just alluding to, most sociopaths, psychopaths start off being charming and all that. They don't. Like, again, using Fatal Attraction as an example, Glenn Close, she started off seeming very normal for the first few scenes, just like a few other, same with, what's her name, Kathy Bates in Misery. You know, but then they, give me, like, my listeners, maybe 3 to 5, if not more, early signs. Those signs that before you know for a fact that what you're dealing with, that you can at least start to begin to say to yourself, okay, that
right.
might be a red flag.
Right. There's 3 things that your listeners can look for that are tip-offs that someone might have this disorder. The first thing is that all sociopaths lie. Now, they lie like they breathe. They lie when they would be better off telling the truth. They lie when over stupid things and over things that they would be better off telling the truth about. Sometimes they just lie for the fun of it. So that's certainly a sign. Another sign is that...
Can I pause you for just a second?
Sure.
That is so funny you say that, because in addition to me being a book author and talk radio host, I mentor a group of young guys at the local university. And there's a guy, if the guys in my program listen to, they would know I'm talking about immediately. But I had this young guy, and he just, like, lies, like, ridiculous. I mean, he'll lie over, like, just stupid stuff. Like, if you asked him what did he have to drink, and you'll see the empty bottle of orange juice, he'll say, no, I had Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody be like, dude, we just saw you drinking the orange juice. Why did you? And anyway, the guy who's opened the program nationally, he made the comment you just made. He said, there's some people and lie to protect themselves or lie to impress people. Then there's some people that just lie just to lie. They just, like you said, it's like breathing. They just lie for the sake of lying.
Right, right. If people who are sociopaths actually get a thrill out of getting over on others, and just to try and see if they can get away with it is reason enough for them to try and lie.
Yeah, so, interesting.
Yes. And now, I mean, it's important to keep in mind that one symptom does not make a sociopath. I mean, just because this particular guy likes to lie doesn't necessarily mean that he's a sociopath. But if he has these other symptoms as well, then you start to be concerned. Like, another thing to watch out for is that sociopaths tend to have a Jekyll and Hyde personality. And what I mean by that is, you know, one minute they're telling you that they love you, you're wonderful, you're their soul minute. The next minute they're telling you that you're a worthless piece of trash. And really.
Hey, you just got to hit home with me. I've experienced a couple of those situations.
Okay, well, then if this person was also lying, then keep listening and I'll tell you some more. Another thing that happens is that a sociopath tends to engage in what we can call the pity play. And what that means is that the person is always trying to make you feel sorry for them. In fact, there's a book by the name of The Sociopath Next Door by Dr. Martha Stout.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. She says in her book that the biggest, most blatant red flag that someone is trying to manipulate you is an appeal to your sympathy. And I mean, I experienced this like the very first time that I met my husband in person, because we had communicated for about three different weeks online. The first time that I met him in person, picture this scene. He actually whips out his wedding pictures from the wife before me who had recently died, okay? And, you know, I mean, this is kind of a strange thing to happen, but essentially what he was doing is trying to make himself trying to appeal to my sympathy that, oh, this poor guy lost his wife and everything, which did happen, although he lied about how closely it had happened. I mean, he told me, you know, I mean, I got the impression that the woman had died quite a long time earlier, and in reality, it was only 2 months before I met him that she had died. But the whole point that he picked this out and showed it to me on our first meeting, okay, our first meeting for coffee, was essentially to make me feel sorry for him.
Interesting.
Right. So if you see, I mean, those three are the ones that I kind of highlight. But the other things that can happen is these people tend to have enormous egos. They look at themselves as the, you know, richest, most attractive, most enthralling people in the world, and they may actually come out and tell you that. And, you know, so that's one thing that you can look for. Another thing is that they tend to move very quickly. I've heard cases where people are proclaiming their love even before they meet the person. Like another person that my husband got involved with, my ex-husband at any rate, he was proclaiming his love to a woman that he had been corresponding with over the internet before they even met. And I've actually heard several cases of this. And what they tend to do is they say, oh, you're my soulmate, you're the person I've been waiting for all my life. And the reason that they do this is that they want to get their hooks in you before you have a chance to get away. So, you know, there's a lot of cases like that. And another thing that is a sign that I've identified is that these people tend to be incredibly sexy. They have a lot of sexual magnetism. And the reason for that is that all sociopaths, both men and women, have lots and lots of testosterone. And the other thing that happens is sex is one of the things that they want. Sociopaths only really want three things. That's power, control, and sex. And because of that, they tend to get a lot of practice. You know, they're promiscuous. They're not real particular about who they're with. And so they tend to be extremely sexy. And, I mean, I've had plenty of people tell me that, you know, their experiences with these people were the best that they ever had. So if you start seeing, like, all these signs, I certainly don't want to say that everybody who's sexy is a sociopath, but if you see someone who's sexy and is lying and is trying to get you to feel sorry for them and is blaming someone else for all their problems, then you need to be concerned.
Now, I'm surprised that one thing was missing, and when you just said, what they really want. I would think, at least with some of them, the con artists particularly, I don't think money would be in there. So you said money's not a big priority? It's just power, control, and sex?
Not always. I mean, you know, a con artist isn't really a personality type. It's more of a behavior.
Okay.
I mean, that person, you know, definitely may be going out for money. I mean, my ex-husband was certainly a con artist because, I mean, he set me up. I mean, the whole reason that he got involved with me was simply to bleed my assets. But money is just a function of something that they could want. In other words, a sociopath, when they first meet you, they always do like a quick assessment to figure out if you have anything that they want. Now, it could be money, it could be sex, it could be business connections, it could be a place to live, any of those things. If you have something of value to them, then that perks their interest and they start to figure out whether or not that you can serve their needs, whatever the needs may be at the time. Then they move on to step two. Step two is that they quickly assess your vulnerabilities. I mean, all people have vulnerabilities. I have weaknesses, you have weaknesses. Any normal person has some kind of vulnerability. And sociopaths are really excellent at figuring out what the vulnerability is. So first they figure out if they have something, if you have something they want. Then they figure out what your vulnerability is. And then they figure out how to go and get it. And what they do is that they tell you anything that you want to hear. I mean, they are extremely perceptive in figuring out what you want. And what they do is they mirror that back to you. So many people describe sociopaths as a chameleon because they simply take on the personality that they think you want to see in order to get what they want.
I've experienced that.
Uh-huh.
I can definitely relate to that. Matter of fact, I can relate to a lot of the symptoms that you said, which is, yep, the I've dealt with at least two or three women that did the thing where they would present scenarios that made me feel sorry for them.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first one you said before that?
They're charismatic and charming. You know, they have a Jekyll and Hyde personality.
Jekyll and Hyde, yep, yep.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, you were saying how they might compliment you one day, and then, yeah, I had an ex-girlfriend who would do that. Like, I could be talking to her on Monday, and she would tell me I was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Then I could be talking to her on Tuesday and Wednesday, and she'd be like, you know, you sorry-ass motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
you know?
Yep.
And so, yeah, it's, yeah, I think that that's the big thing is learning to these shine. Now, wouldn't one be, and excuse me if you've already mentioned it, but again, using my movie references, I noticed both in my personal life, and I've seen this in a couple of movies that had these type of, you know, unbalanced people, is like Misery, for example. One of James Caan's first signs that Kathy Bates' character was crazy was that she went off over something that was just very trivial. And I've noticed with at least a handful of women I've dealt with, that's what would usually be my first red flag, is they would go off over something that in the big picture was very trivial. Like, if you drank their last soda without asking, they would go off on you as if you had stole $1,000 from their grandmother.
That's certainly possible. And yes, that can be a symptom. Sociopaths tend to express rage over the dumbest things. And, I mean, I experienced that, too, with my ex-husband. I remember that one time he was in selling the townhouse that his previous wife, the woman who died, had owned. And so he had a real estate person coming over. Well, I didn't know that this real estate person was coming over and showing the property. So I was there at the house picking some things out. And, you know, it was a miscommunication. I had no idea this person was coming over. Well, he went off on me like you couldn't believe. You know, like I had like ruined his life or something like that because I happened to be there when the real estate agent came by. And, you know, it was just, I was like, huh? And that's actually one of the another sign to watch out for. It's not what I would consider to be like a primary sign, but if a person does something that leaves you going, you know, WTF, it's like, huh? Then you should pay attention to what might be going on, because they do tend to do things like that. They tend to come out of left field with some reaction or some statement or some demand that seems like totally uncalled for. And you're just kind of scratching your head and wondering, like, where in the world did that come from? You do need to pay attention, because that might be a warning sign that you are dealing with someone who's got some issues.
Listeners, if you want to call in and ask a question of Ms. Anderson, or express a comment, or maybe briefly talking about an experience you had with a psychopath, sociopath, con artist, all of the above, you can call in to 646-478-5710. Again, that's 646-478-5710. Right now, I'm going to take a quick intermission, but when I get back, I will have more questions for Ms. Donna Anderson, author of, Love Fraud. We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times bestselling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zay. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mode 1 fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mode 1.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's over 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay.
There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindset is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that's, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
Just so listeners know, there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book, and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger, and now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that, yeah.
Oh, man, you gotta love it.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to my interview with book author Donna Anderson on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What we're talking about tonight is being in a situation where you're in a relationship, either you're on the verge of being in a relationship with a person or you are in a relationship with a person who you end up identifying as either a romantic sociopath, a romantic psychopath, a romantic con artist, or in many cases, all of the above. And my special guest for the evening is Miss Donna Anderson. Miss Donna Anderson, she has a book out where she chronicles her experience with a guy who was a con artist and sociopath. And her book is entitled Love Frog, How Marriage to a Sociopath Fulfilled My Spiritual Plan. And she also has a website, lovefrog.com. Let me give a few shout-outs to people new in my chat room. I see beautiful butterflies in my chat room. Black Miss is in my chat room. I got a number of guests in my chat room. I got Jay Infinite in my chat room. I got Rachel Garrett in my chat room. I got not misguided, but self-guided in my chat room. I got Sister in my chat room. And I got Sookie now in my chat room. Oh, and for NBA fans, the Lakers got their revenge. They won 92-86 in Boston. That's just for the people who are into the NBA. I know some people like to watch the NBA games as they listen to my show. But, yeah, this is not really a lighthearted topic because I think if you've been a person who's been in a relationship that's just crazy, again, for lack of a better term, some people call it mentally imbalanced, mentally and emotionally unstable, it's not a good situation to be in at all, especially if you're in a situation where you can't easily get out of the relationship. Or it might be just at minimum. Maybe the person's not mentally ill, but they're just very calculating, a pathological liar, master manipulator. That can only end badly. And that's what we're talking about with my guest, Donna Anderson. I see I got someone in my phone queue, area code 432-432. You're now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my special guest, Miss Donna Anderson. What's your question or comment?
Oh, boy, we could probably go on all night on this one. I was married for 20 years. When you made the comment, that you said, you're not going to find this guy in a relationship for 20 years. Oh, the hell you won't. I was in it for 21 years, 2 months, and 6 days.
Wow, she got it down to the day.
Yes, I do. And we've been divorced now. I left him, and we've been divorced for a year of this past September. And I'll tell you, this is one of the most frustrating personalities you will ever come across. You think your mother-in-law personality is bad? Oh, no. This will make you want to do a crime. So, I mean.
Okay, well, let me ask you, what made your ex-husband Now, some women, they just end up marrying guys that are, you know, jerks and assholes. What would make you say he was a psychopath and or sociopath?
Well, the whole when I saw your deal where it says romantic sociopath, I thought, oh my God, that is exactly what he was. I tried forever to figure out what his problem was, and as much as I will acknowledge that bipolar and ADD, I realize those are actual afflictions, they're actual diseases, but I think they're overdiagnosed a lot of times, but. I believe I had just kind of started to come to it that maybe it was bipolar that was his problem, but this really fits him to a T.
So he had a lot of mood swings?
Not so much mood swings, but he would come and he just knew, like she said, Miss Anderson, like she said, they know how to work you. It's like they study you, they know, but they can read people almost immediately, and they're quick studies. And so when they know what they want and you've got something they want, they will go to work on you to get it. And they know exactly how to work you to get it. And even though I know that there were two sides to him, and that was what was most frustrating, is to see one side and then all of a sudden just see that just start slipping away and all these little behaviors, all these things going on, and you're trying to figure it out. You know, I was like, what, you know, what was that? I'm an analyzer. So before I attack, I was like, okay, why'd you do that? Did I have something to do with it? Was it something I said, something I did? Is it something somebody else said or did, or are you just being a jerk? You know, or is it just some hang up, you know, a pet peeve? What caused, you know, him to react that way? And I think that's, and probably more so in women than anything, we always, what did I do? What can I do to make it better? You know, and that's not, we shouldn't do that. Nobody should do that. But I was, it was just not too long ago, 6-8 months ago, I was I had just moved and I was unpacking and stuff, had the TV on, was listening. And there was a show, a documentary came on. It kind of started talking about Einstein and Einstein's brain and how, you know, just what he was capable of and kind of his life story up to a point. And then it kind of went into just basically everybody's brain and how it functions. And the more I listened to this, the more interesting it was, because they kind of linked serial killers and con artists and pathological or habitual liars together. Basically, their link is, it's almost, and this is my terminology of it, that they don't fire on all points. And there's a certain part of the brain that there is no sense of wrongdoing. You know, they don't care what they're doing or that they're hurting somebody. They have no conscience.
Okay. Now, based on what she said, Donna, do you have anything to add as feedback or commentary?
Well, I can certainly agree with the last point. Sociopaths literally do not feel empathy for other human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very difficult for most of us to get our minds around, you know, because we all believe that everybody wants the same thing, that everybody wants to be loved. And with a sociopath, that's not true. Sociopaths do not care about being loved. They care about power, control, and sex. And there are differences in the brains. And, you know, they're still trying to sort out exactly what happens, but sociopathic brains are definitely different from those of the rest of us. And, it becomes an interesting quandary, because you tend to wonder whether or not this is like a disability. You know, for example, I don't know if you remember the Elizabeth Smart case, where that guy like pretended to be crazy, and he was essentially a sociopath. And it took the government prosecutors a long time to actually prove that the guy was lying in when he was saying he was hearing God and the guy who perpetrated the crime, because he pretended to be crazy. But they're not. They're very calculating. And, that's exactly what happens in these situations.
Now, one thing I read that I found very interesting. And you can let me know if this is true or not. It said, once a person becomes a full-fledged adult, so I'm estimating maybe like 21 years of age or older, and they are a sociopath or a psychopath, they really cannot be rehabilitated. They can go through therapy, but they will never, you will never unmake them a psychopath or unmake them a sociopath.
I agree.
That's true.
I think so. I believe that because, and see, we actually went to counseling, and because when I finally had enough and told him that I was leaving, he literally went to his knees crying,
mm-hmm.
begging me not to go,
mm-hmm.
that he was, you know, and that he would do anything to make me stay, even though, I mean, he was cheating on me. And just on the side, I will say that he wanted for nothing. I'm no prude. You know, I mean, he wanted for nothing at home. He had the best of all worlds. We had two children, and he really didn't. But it's like nothing is ever enough for them, and for him anyway. I shouldn't, you know, speak too broadly, but I know for a fact for him, there was, and there never would be, there never will be anything. But his habits, you know, and I think it's a lot of it was short man syndrome, as they call it, and I think there was a little bit of an inferiority complex, you know, which is associated, I think, with that, and that's what that is. That's why they call it that, because, you know, he thinks, oh, man, all my friends are 6 foot tall, and so he has to make himself bigger to fit in and to, you know, to be accepted. But he also, he just, when we went to counseling, I said, you have a problem, and it's not going to get any better. You need help. And he agreed. He admitted that he had a problem, and so we went. But the psychologist that we went to, kind of the first visits were just with me, and I was like, what the heck, you know, why? It was like, he's the one with the problem. I'm not addicted to sex. I'm not, you know, going off and doing these things. He's the one that's doing all this stuff, and so he's like, no. And
okay, Carla, let me ask you this. I have to move on to another caller, but I'm going to just ask you real quickly. What have you learned from this relationship you've described that will help you, say, with a future campaign? What are like two or three red flag signs that you would now know to look out for?
Oh, wow, definitely the lying. That's, you know, and because they will do anything to cover up one lie after another. But they are extreme. I mean, they're just real, the lies are just real flamboyant. But that, definitely the lying, because you'll pick up on that quicker than anything. And I can't think that would just be the main thing. And then just watching. Because you're going to have trust. I do. I mean, that's something I have to work through, is trust issues. But, and it's something that I won't even be able to help myself, I know, is watching for those signs, watching for the certain things. And so you'll always be watching. And if they're going off, you know, phone calls, you know, if they start going off, you know, someplace else, or if the phone calls and they, you know, delete or hit end until, you know, they won't speak to anybody with you there. Money disappearing. He is very obsessed with money. It was all about wealth. And, again, I thought that's associated with power. And so was love. I think love was power. It didn't mean like it did. So... But I think that you have to watch for that double-edged sword, that double personality. Like the 1 minute, you know, they're all cuddly and loving, and then the next they're like, oh, you know, you just get on my nerves.
Well, thank you
yeah.
so much for calling in. I appreciate you sharing your story, caller. Now, before I move on to my next caller, Donna, I got a question. I was just telling you that I read where they really can be, if this what I read was true and valid. If they can't be rehabilitated, why would a sociopath or a psychopath even need to go to therapy? I mean, wouldn't that be a waste of time?
It is a waste of time. But when they do go, it's generally for one of two reasons. One is that they're court mandated to go. Sometimes this happens when there's a divorce and, you know, there's children involved and there's all this conflict in the divorce. So the court will say, you know, you have to go to therapy, you have to go to anger management class or something like that. So they show up in therapy because they've been ordered to do it by the court. The second reason that they may go to therapy is to just to keep the scam going. I've heard of many, many cases, just like your caller described, where, you know, she threatens to leave, he gets on his knees and cries. I mean, I've heard that exact story hundreds of times, and then he says, okay, I'll do whatever you want, I'll go to therapy. And, you know, so he doesn't really think that there's something wrong with them. The thing is, sociopaths, they do not feel any distress about their condition. You know, they know that they are causing other people all kinds of heartache and all kinds of pain. They just don't care. And they don't think there's anything wrong with their behavior. A sociopath looks at the world as predators and prey. And they are the predators and everybody else is prey. And they see nothing wrong with that. So the only reason that they would be going to therapy is to just kind of string it along a little more because they're still getting something out of the person that they're with. And so, you know, they're putting up an act, pretending that they're going to a therapy, pretending that they're going to, you know, try and reform, essentially because, you know, they're not ready to move on yet. You know, they still want something from the person that they're with, so they're going to try and keep the scam going a little while longer.
Now, one more thing before I take this next caller. Man, I just lost my – oh, mentioned crying. Okay, now, I had this woman who I think was a romantic sociopath, or at minimum, she's just a master manipulator. But, man, when she cried, it was so believable.
Yeah.
Do they know how to, like, is that a skill they learn, how to cry, like, in a very believable manner?
Yes. The short answer is yes.
Wow.
I mean, my ex-husband did that to me, too. You know, we had an argument, and he stood there with tears rolling down his cheeks. I don't want you to hate me. You know, it was an act. I mean, these people are incredible actors. And, yes, they can turn it on. And actually what's kind of weird is that sociopaths really do not understand what different facial expressions may mean. I mean, they don't have the internal capacity to interpret emotions. So they actually view emotions as like a foreign language. You know, they kind of learn how to understand emotions the way somebody would learn to speak a different language. But they get very good at it. And it gets to the point where they can actually like run through, like, what emotion do you want to see today? I'll do that. And they just turn it on. I mean, they're incredible actors.
Wow. That's interesting to know because, yeah, one of my women who I would put in the category, that was her main, I would almost rank that as her number one manipulative tool. She knew how to cry in a manner that I'll admit it would affect me. It would make me feel sorry for her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, for example, if she wanted to get some money out of me, she'd be like, oh, my God, you know, my bills are just killing me. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And, you know. Yeah, so that's interesting. Okay, now I'm going to take another caller, area code 843. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry and my guest book author, Donna Anderson. What's your question or comment?
Hey, this is your fellow wing lover here, T. Smitty, a.k.a. Tobias. What's going on, man?
What's up, T. Smitty? What you got to contribute to this conversation?
Man, I just wanted to show you some support while I'm here. Uncle Sam trying to kick my ass, but I got to show some support. But thing is, you know, we asked about the counseling. Also, the government gets paid off. The system gets paid also from a lot of dysfunctional people. They don't care if it helps anybody while they're getting paid. But the question I have is, because you probably addressed it earlier, so sorry about y'all repeat yourself, but two things. First, why do people ignore the signs? And why do people stay with these people when they exhibit that behavior already at risk of their own lives?
It's very interesting what goes on, and I'm glad you brought this up. You often see this situation with domestic violence cases, you know, where a woman is involved with somebody, or and sometimes men, because there are women who are perpetrators of domestic violence. But, you know, you say, why doesn't this person leave? And what happens in these situations is that a psychological bond is formed between the perpetrator and the victim, and it's called a trauma bond. And it's really kind of wild, but essentially what happens is that these relationships create changes, psychological changes, chemical changes, and structural changes in the brain, so that the victim actually ends up being addicted to the perpetrator. It's a very, very scary situation. And what happens is that there are normal bonding processes that go on between people when they get in a relationship. And this is normal. It's nature's way of keeping people together when for the purpose of having children and taking care of children. But somehow the sociopaths manage to hijack this whole process. And what happens is that a normal bond forms because, you know, when you first meet a sociopath, the person is charming, they're wonderful, they're showering you with attention, they're affectionate. And so what's happening is that, you know, you're falling for this person because you are having a pleasant experience. Pleasure is required to form a bond between people. Now, what they found out through addiction research is that pleasure is not required to maintain a bond. So once this bond forms, you know, you feel compelled to be with the person, you want to spend time with them, you know, while everything is all nice and they're being affectionate and everything. Well, then the sociopath behavior starts to change. But you still have this bond that has been formed while the person was pleasant and while it was a pleasurable experience. So what happens is that you start to experience anxiety, you know, because things are changing, or the sociopath may actually do something on purpose to make you feel anxious and to make you feel fearful, perhaps fearful that you're going to lose the relationship. So what happens at this point is that fear and anxiety actually strengthen the psychological bond that you feel for this person. So what happens is you end up being addicted to this person and you feel like you can't leave, even though you know that the person is no longer good for you.
That was a good answer.
It's really scary. I mean, you know, any relationship causes changes in the brain, and the sociopaths just know how to, you know, instinctively manipulate this whole process so that you feel compelled to stay with them.
Yeah. I was going to say that part also, because but the thing that people don't understand, like, just take away the word sociopath, these people are smart. And, like, these people that manipulate people, they're smart. They know how to get you. And they know what it takes to keep that person. And, like, and you got to get them on that, but do you have sympathy for anyone that decides to stay with these people, knowing what these people are doing?
I do, because I know how difficult it is to break free. You know, because what happens is that there's more to the cycle that goes on. You know, the bond forms. The bond is reinforced through anxiety and fear. And then what happens is that you know, because the person, the victim, is feeling anxious, she turns to, assuming that the victim is a woman, she turns to the sociopath, you know, asking the sociopath, you know, please go back to the way it was. You know, it used to be so wonderful. What's going on here now? Well, then the sociopath proceeds to, you know, relent, says, okay, you know, we'll go back to the way it was. And then what happens is that they have sex. Sex is another thing that reinforces this bond. So it turns into this vicious circle where, you know, first there turns out to be pleasure, and then there turns out to be anxiety. So the bond is strengthened. And then, you know, the victim turns to the sociopath for relief from anxiety. And so then they have sex. So the bond is strengthened again, and it keeps going around and around and around. And it becomes a very difficult psychological situation. In fact, you know, there's a technical term called the Stockholm syndrome, and that was because of a case, I think it was, oh gosh, back maybe in the 70s, where these kidnappers entered a bank in Stockholm, and afterwards, you know, they had all these captors, the bank employees. Well, the bank employees became bonded to their kidnappers. And, you know, so they've recognized the psychological trauma that forms. And we actually refer to it on Love Fraud as a trauma bond. And, you know, so it's a very difficult thing to break free of. So, yes, I do have sympathy, and I know how hard it is.
Yeah. Man, that's some good stuff. My last thing, and I'm going to go. But so how can that person exit that situation? Because the sociopath is not going to stop because the sociopath is getting whatever he or she wants. So
right.
What's the best method for that person to exit that situation? Because it's going to be up to that person to exit.
You're absolutely right. And essentially, the whole situation needs to be treated the same way you would treat an addiction. What we recommend is that the victim has no contact with the sociopath. Now, this can be very difficult, you know, because you're bonded to the person. And I have many, many cases of people who say, you know, they feel like they have to call. Sometimes they say they want to get closure, you know, all this other type of reasons to get back in contact with the sociopath. But you have to go no contact, which means nothing, no emails, no text messages, certainly don't see the person. You don't even want to be in contact with any of the person's friends or relatives or anything like that. And you have to maintain that, and then you have to take it one day at a time, like just as if you were recovering, you know, from an alcohol addiction or trying to give up smoking. You have to get through one day, then you have to get through the next day, and eventually over time the person's effect on you starts to dissipate. However, if you know, sometimes what happens is people think that they, you know, they've progressed enough that they're strong enough and they can, you know, just, you know, get into contact with the person to deal with them. They're back at square one. You know, it's just like a total relapse, and then you have to go through the whole process again.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, though. Thanks. That's some good stuff. Enjoy talking to you. Thanks, Alan, for taking my call, man.
Oh, no problem, T. Smitty.
All right, man.
I'm going to go right into another call, area code 209, you're now upfront and straightforward. Alan Roger Curry, my guest, Donna Anderson. What's your question or comment?
I had a few questions. One, now, in relation to being sociopath, I've experienced the same relationship, but not only in my romantic, but also, like, just with friends. But in relation when we're talking about man and woman, who has who's far more worse as a sociopath, men or women? Because I found that I could, out of talking to my friends and family, I could not find a man in his problems and his effect on women as comparable to the women that have terrorized and manipulated and used men. I mean, I would like Donna and Mo to, you know, comment on this. So, like, who's far more destructive towards the opposite sex, men or women?
They are equally destructive. I mean, you are absolutely right in that the women sociopaths are extremely destructive. There are statistically more male sociopaths than female sociopaths. I mean, there's approximately three times as many men as there are women, and that's just a biological fact. However, the women are just as bad as the men, you know, and what's really awful is how female sociopaths treat their children, because all sociopaths view children as possessions or pawns, if they have anything to do with them at all. You know, sometimes they just abandon them and neglect them, but if they are involved with the children, it's because of they view them as property, the same way they would, you know, view a widescreen television or something like that. And the women are terrible towards their children. And this becomes a real issue, especially in custody situations, because the courts and many people assume that all women have maternal instincts. And female sociopaths do not. And, you know, so it becomes very distressful, especially if the father of the children is a healthy parent and wants to do what's good for the kids, and they're dealing with this situation, you know, where the mother is assumed to be the person who is best able to take care for the kids, and the mother is abusing the children. I mean, what goes on with the female sociopaths is just horrendous, and it is just as bad as what goes on with the men.
Oh, okay. You were just talking about with the other caller about how the victim, I remember there's this woman that I was dealing with a long time ago, and she was like, she wasn't like on the, like a socio, but she was like, I guess one of those scorned women. She was a little older than me, so I guess that has something to do with it. But like, what other tips would you give a person as far as not have any contact? Because I haven't talked to her in like over a year, but I still feel that there's that deep, deep, deep part of me that wants to, you know, talk again. But
you just have to avoid it. I mean, you just have to be strong and understand that this person is bad for you. If the person was a sociopath, you can be sure that the person is not pining for you. You know, I mean, I get that a lot where people say, you know, I want this person to know how much he hurt me, or I want this person to know that, you know, I really did care and everything like that. The sociopath doesn't care. You know, it's like they really feel no empathetic connection to anyone. So I advise people, if they're leaving a relationship like this, don't bother, you know, trying to do it nice or trying to let them down easy or anything like that. You know, this person is just simply not worth it to you. You need to cut it off and walk away and never look back.
What if you know her friends? Because some of us, we have some of the same friends, though.
That becomes a big problem, because what happens is that usually the sociopathic person is engaging in what we call the smear campaign. And what that means is the person is going around and telling all the friends and sometimes business associates and anybody that you may have in common, you know, that everything that happened is your fault and that you're crazy and there's something wrong with you and you've got mental issues. I mean, this is a big thing. Sociopaths love to claim that. And what happens is they are so convincing that the people who are listening to this tend to believe them. So often, unfortunately, what happens is that not only do you have to cut off relationships with the sociopath, but you may have to cut off relationships with everyone who you knew with the sociopath, you know, because the sociopath is certainly working the crowd and telling all these other people, you know, how terrible you are, and it's quite possible you may not be able to repair those relationships.
Okay, well, those questions I had. Thank you for answering, and keep on listening.
Well, thank you for calling in, caller. Wow, Ben, you, I told you this is an interesting subject for a lot of people. Now, I've also read where sociopaths, when you say another sign is that they don't have too many, if any, really like close long-term friends.
No, they don't. Sociopaths exploits everybody that they meet, you know, and so that they really don't establish friendships. They establish associations with people who might be useful to them. So they do not have friends. And, you know, this is often a sign, too, although they may appear to have friends, you know, because they can be very entertaining, they can be very charming, you know, and they like being around people. It's not like they're antisocial, but there are no real true relationships. Now, there are people who've been hanging around for a long time, and there are also people who may not realize the extent of the problem. So, you know, they can have associates, but as far as someone who's a real true friend, I mean, they are not capable of doing it. They can't be a friend, so they can't have a friend.
Because what I noticed, like I said, there's been at least a handful of women I've dealt with that fell into this category. And one in particular I'm thinking of, she was like that not only with men would I say she was exploitive and manipulative, but I would say just about all of her female friends, and I use that word friend loosely, she didn't really interact with female friends because she genuinely enjoyed their company. She interacted with them to get a favor or to set them up for a favor down the line.
Right. That's exactly right. And Yeah, that brings up a point that I want to address. The scope of this problem. Experts estimate that 1% to 4% of the population are sociopaths. So that means in the United States there are 3 million to 12 million sociopaths. Now, that's a lot. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is that sociopaths exploit everybody in their lives. I mean, one of the misnomers is that there's such a thing as just a romantic sociopath or a romantic psychopath or a romantic con artist. People with this personality disorder exploit everybody. It's not just their romantic partners. They also exploit whoever they may be working with. They exploit their bosses. They exploit their family members. They exploit their children. Everybody in their lives gets exploited. Now, I estimate that my ex-husband exploited maybe 20 people. And, in fact, I know of at least 20 or 30 women that he was involved with. That's just the beginning. And if you estimate that every sociopath exploits 20 people, which is a low estimate, that means that there are 60 to 240 million victims of sociopaths in the United States. So that's why, you know, you ran across several of these people and your callers have involved with people. They're everywhere. These people are everywhere, and the people who are being victimized are everywhere. Unfortunately, we don't understand what we're dealing with and, you know, what the symptoms are, and we don't realize that the person who is making us nuts under whatever circumstances has a personality disorder.
Okay, I got two questions from the chat room. One was, are sociopaths very possessive and territorial?
Yes, and people tend to misinterpret that. One of the things that sociopaths do is, especially early in the relationship, is that they are overly attentive. They want to be with you all the time. They want to monopolize your time. They don't want you to spend time with your family and friends. And today, what happens a lot is that they do a lot of emailing and a lot of texting. Sociopaths are constantly texting, you know, the partner to, you know, and it's under the guise of, you know, trying to, you know, find out what you're doing, how your day is going, something like that. They may call 20 and 30 times a day. What's important to understand is that this is not a sign of affection. It's a sign of the individual wanting to control you. You know, they want to know where you are all the time. So, yes, they are definitely territorial. They are definitely jealous. And it's all a matter of control because that's what they want. They want control.
Okay, I'm going to take another intermission break. But, well, I'm going to ask you two questions before I go to my next intermission break. One, my last caller was talking about genders, asked about gender. Is there anything that, say, unique to a female sociopath that a male sociopath doesn't exhibit and vice versa?
I would say that the only real difference is that the males can be more violent than the females. The females can be violent, so this is just a matter of degree. But, you know, men being physical and bigger usually, as just that's what their body types are, they tend to be more physical and more violent than the female does. The female tends to be more manipulative.
You know, in my experience, I would have to say I totally agree with that because obviously, being a man, I've dealt with more female manipulators and I would say sociopaths. And, yeah, they were just extremely manipulative. But I can't say I had any of them, say, try to attack me with a knife. Although I had one did threaten to kill me. She threatened to kill me one time. But just based on the media, usually when I read a story about, like, a spouse killing another spouse, usually the man who killed his wife. Or, you know, shot her, stabbed her. So, yeah, I would say when it comes to the more violent type activities, I would probably lean towards saying that the men are more definitely more guilty. But, yeah, women can, like you said, be extremely manipulative. Oh, now, one other question I have from the chat room. Somebody asked, is sociopathy or psychopathy, is that something that is created by some, say, like a traumatic experience in their life, like sexual abuse, or are they just born with some kind of genetic defect?
Actually, it's a combination of the two. Psychopathy or sociopathy, whichever term you want to use, is highly genetic. So what that means, of course, is that, you know, if someone is a sociopath and has children, the children are at risk of developing this disorder. However, that doesn't mean that it absolutely has to develop. If a person realizes that they've had a child with someone who is a sociopath, they can take steps to parent the child so that the full disorder does not come to fruition. And this can be very difficult. It's actually like superhuman parenting in order to, you know, give the child enough love and affection so that the disorder does not develop. But it can happen that, you know, because of a traumatic experience, someone can go down this path. Because what tends to happen is that sociopaths make terrible parents. So if they have a child, the child is born with a risk of becoming a sociopath, and then they get this terrible parenting, you know, because that's what sociopaths do. I mean, sociopaths can be physically abusive. They can be sexually abusive. They can be emotionally abusive. So the child often gets a double whammy. They get the genetic predisposition, and then they get the terrible parenting. Some kids never have a chance, you know, because they're born into this situation where there is practically no other outcome.
Wow. You are really enlightening me, because you got me thinking, of course, of people out there. It's like a lot of pieces of the puzzle are falling in place. Listeners, if you want to call in and ask a question or share a story, brief story of yours related to a relationship you had with a con artist, sociopath, psychopath, the number is 646-478-5710, 646-478-5710. I'm about to take my second intermission break, let my guests get a swig of water, but I will be back in about three and a half minutes. So don't go anywhere. I'll be back with more questions for Miss Donna Anderson.
Do you want to let loose?
Yep.
Do you want to vent on the issues
all the time?
Do you want to express your view?
Yes, sir.
Then sound off. This is your host, Harold L.,
okay,
inviting you to join me on Blog Talk Radio with the Sound Off Now show.
That's what's up.
Real life, real issues, real talk,
okay,
uncensored. Join me on the SON Network Monday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern for some of the most controversial issues and forums as we simply sound off.
I'm there.
Come join us on Sound Off Now, where nothing is off limits.
That's what's up.
www.blogtalkradio.com/sound-off-now.
In this technology age, while we're on the information highway, we'll post about getting a better job, we'll tweet to say that we love what we just ate. When's the last time your MySpace someone is having you been molested? Join us on Left Blank for the Great American Speak Out to share your story about child molestation, incest, and or child abuse. Airing Monday, April 26th at 11 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/leftblank. To email your story to us anonymously, send it to jollialiali@jollialiali.com.
I never really looked at myself as a quote-unquote bad boy, at least not in all regards. I mean, I ain't never robbed no bank, and I ain't never skipped 2 weeks of school. So in terms of just various facets of my behavior, I wouldn't necessarily call myself this. But yeah, when it comes to sex, I've definitely been that guy.
Okay.
I will push a woman's boundaries.
You know what? To be honest with you, I think most women are waiting for a man to do that. Most women want a man to do that. most women that are coming up in the day and age where a woman is supposed to be the good girl has this idea that a man is going to bring that out of her, and she's hoping that he will. Unfortunately, a lot of men, I won't say a lot of men, but some men have no idea what they're doing. And so they're not able to get that out of her. And then everybody's frustrated. She's frustrated, he's frustrated. Nobody knows why it's not working. But women are like, go ahead, like blindfold her and just take her wherever you want to take her. She's waiting for a man to command that. So she can't, you know, in some cases be that free to say, okay, blindfold me and take me wherever you want to take me. And it's because in some way she's afraid of where you might take her. You know, depending on what the relationship is like with him and how much she trusts him. And in other cases, she just doesn't know how to say that herself.
No woman wants a man that can't lay it down in the bedroom. Period. And, you know, women, we go through this, oh, I want to be held and I want to cuddle and I want to talk. Yeah, we want to do all of that. But when it comes down to it, we want to be climbing off the ceiling just like everybody else does.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to my interview with book author Donna Anderson on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back. Welcome back to the last roughly 20 minutes or so of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We are having the most interesting discussion tonight, and it's about not everybody in society has experienced this, and thank goodness they haven't, but there's a few of us that have found ourselves either in a relationship with someone or at minimum on the verge of being in a relationship with someone who ends up being identified as a con artist, a psychopath, sociopath, or in many cases, all of the above. And my guest has a book out that is designed to help men and women identify when they might be in the company of someone who is a sociopath, and it is Love Fraud, How Marriage to a Sociopath Fulfilled My Spiritual Plan. Now, I want you to explain, Donna, that the subtitle, of your book. How did this interesting, this relationship you had with this guy make you fulfill your spiritual plan?
Yeah, it is kind of odd to have those two words in the same sentence, sociopath and spiritual, but that is exactly what happened, because when I was involved with this man, I mean, my life was shredded. I actually had, you know, no idea how this came about, because I'm a good and honest person. I'm responsible. I'm dependable. I care about people. I never in my life ran with a fast crowd. So why in the world did I end up with this person who lied and cheated and took me for everything that I had? And, you know, it absolutely made no sense. So what happened was I started to pray. I was like, you know, I prayed to get my life back, and I prayed that there would be an answer to what was going on. And I actually did not get my life back, but what happened was that because of this experience, I ended up with a life that's far better than what I ever had before I was with a sociopath, because after all this trauma and everything that happened to me, what it allowed me to do is find those points within myself that attracted this relationship to begin with. In other words, I had some beliefs about myself, beliefs that I was unworthy, beliefs that I had to achieve in order to be loved, and I had all these mistaken beliefs about myself that caused me to fall for this sociopath, and that once I had this experience and it directed me to these beliefs and I was able to access them and remove them. And because of that, it allowed me to clear all these negative beliefs that I had about myself, and I moved on. And from the empty spaces that were filled with these mistaken beliefs, I was able to fill them with love and affection. And I am remarried. I have a wonderful husband, and he is the one who is supporting me as I develop love fraud. And it's turned out to be a very positive experience. And I don't want to suggest that all experiences with sociopaths are positive, because they're terrible. I mean, going through it, it was extremely traumatic. And you know, I spent a lot of time crying. I spent a lot of time beating pillows and you know, trying to get my anger out about what happened. But it turned out that I had a spiritual reason for the entire experience. And because of it, I was able to grow and find true love and peace and happiness in my life.
Well, that sounds great. Okay. Real quick, I want to give some shout-outs to people who joined me late in my chat room. I see Vanessa Turner in my chat room. I see Still Searching 99 in my chat room. I see Special 01 in my chat room. I see Love and Light in my chat room. I see a number of guests in my chat room. And then the most unique username, Choosy Mothers Choose Jeff, is in my chat room. See, you got Donna laughing. Now, somebody wrote something interesting in my chat room. It said, not all people with narcissistic tendencies are sociopaths, but all sociopaths have narcissistic tendencies. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would. Narcissism is essentially one of the characteristics of sociopaths, and a narcissist is someone who is essentially focused on themselves. But really what you need to understand is that all these disorders are essentially points on a continuum. It's very difficult to say who is or is not a sociopath, because it's a range of behaviors, and sociopaths can exhibit more degrees or less degrees of all the specific varieties or all the different criteria and behaviors that make up a sociopath. I like to describe it as they range from sleazy to serial killer, and, you know, because there are a range of behaviors that can go on, and, you know, so that is absolutely correct. And generally, the difference is that in the amount of premeditation that goes into the harm that is caused to another person, narcissists tend to be essentially clueless. You know, they are focused on themselves, and they kind of don't care, you know, what happens to someone else as long as, you know, they get the attention that they want. A sociopath, on the other hand, may purposely go out and try to harm somebody. So the difference is in the amount of harm that is specifically and purposely directed towards somebody else.
Okay. Now, I asked you a question earlier, and this is going to be a similar question. I asked you about, I said, I think one of the characteristics is that they don't have any close long-term friendships. Like, one of the last women I dealt with, who I feel was a romantic sociopath, one of the first times I would say I recognized a red flag in her was she didn't want me Whenever I asked specific detailed questions about her past, she got very irritated. Would you say sociopaths try to keep as much as possible about their past? Well, I guess for obvious reasons, because if you know about their past, you're going to inevitably find out that.
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
You know, because sometimes and often they're very vague about answering questions. But other times what they do, which is very interesting, is that they seem to be providing you with all kinds of detail about their past. You know, for example, I was just talking on the phone with a woman the other day, and this poor woman had gotten involved with somebody. You know, she was a real estate agent down in the islands, and he essentially approached her on for business purposes, telling her that, you know, he was interested in buying some property, and he proceeds to tell her over a period of months that, you know, he used to work for Goldman Sachs, and he's now in Europe, and he has all this money and investments and numbered accounts and all this other kind of stuff. And he goes on and on and on with incredible detail as far as, you know, all his different assets and properties and his past and what he's done. Well, the whole thing was fabricated, and essentially the guy, you know, was telling her this story to earn her trust, and she ended up sending him $1 million, you know.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, you know, after she does this, a friend of hers Googled the guy and found out that he was a con artist who had, you know, served in jail. And, but, you know, he pretended that he had all this history and all this assets, so he told this entire story, but it was all fabricated. Oh, and plus, he was telling her that he had cancer and that he had a previous wife who had died and he had a child who had died. So he was pulling the whole pity play on her. Well, that was all fabricated. Everything was fake.
So would you say, what's the guy Madoff? I don't know his first name. I forgot.
The guy I was talking about?
No, this guy, you know who was in the news, Madoff.
Oh, Bernie Madoff.
Would you say he was a sociopath or
absolutely.
He just an asshole?
No, he absolutely is a sociopath. Absolutely. And you know, that's one of the things that's interesting to bring up, because a lot of people think that you have to be stupid or vulnerable, you know, to fall for a sociopath. Well, look at his victims. I mean, he had financial institutions. He had all these sophisticated investors. And none of these people, you know, figured out that he was a fake. So, you know, it's very possible for someone who is intelligent and who should know better to get swindled and conned by a sociopath, because they are that good.
Interesting. Or for what was the guy who did the Enron scandal?
Absolutely. Yes. Fastoff was one of the names. You know, and that's one of the things that people need to understand, is that sociopaths are destructive in any situation. In fact, here's an interesting statistic. There's a guy who you know of, Dr. Robert Hare. He's the guru of psychopaths. Well, he says that 1% of the general population are psychopaths, and 3% of corporate executives are psychopaths. So that means there's three times as many psychopaths in the corner office as there is in the general population.
Wow. I remember a friend of mine actually made a comment, and he made it in a lighthearted manner at the time, but he said that. He said, in order, I can't remember the exact words, but it's to the effect of, in order to rise to the heights of that type of success where you say you're the CEO of a major corporation, et cetera, you almost have to have just no empathy. You can't care about doing people cold. You know, he basically was saying that people with normal, you know, empathetic type feelings, they wouldn't be willing to backstab the people necessary to get to the top, quote unquote.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's a conception that a lot of people who are like boards of directors and who are hiring CEOs seem to have. But what really happens in these situations is that if you get a person like this at the top of a corporation, there's a good chance that the whole corporation will go down, you know, because they are that destructive and everything just falls apart. I mean, look what happened to Madoff. Look what happened to WorldCom. Look what happened to Enron. I mean, these organizations were all run by psychopaths, and they all disintegrated, costing people billions of dollars.
Good point. Okay, I only got about 4 to 5 minutes left. So I'm going to ask you real quick. I saw where you have written, and this has become very popular in this day and age, and I've even done shows about this. You, correct me if I'm wrong, you are almost anti-online dating.
Oh, online dating is extremely dangerous, and, you know, for a lot of reasons. First of all, if we understand that 1% to 4% of the population are sociopaths, now, this is cuts across all areas. You have to understand that sociopaths are not limited to what you might call a bad neighborhood. You know, they are in all segments of society. They are men, they are women, rich, poor, all education levels, all religious groups, all communities. They're everywhere. They are also on the Internet. So if we have, in the United States, 220 million Internet users, and if you estimate that 1% to 4% of them are sociopaths, that means there's 2.2 million to 8.8 million sociopaths online. Okay? So, you know, you have to assume that a certain percentage of the people you may be dealing with and meeting online are sociopaths. Now, what happens, of course, is that, you know, when you're communicating with someone online, you really don't know who you're talking to. And for sociopaths, the Internet is just like the perfect storm, you know, because what they do is they have profiles on many different dating sites at the same time, and essentially they're out trolling, you know, they're chumming for victims, and, you know, they just keep throwing out the hooks to see if somebody bites, and eventually somebody will bite. So, but what they're doing is that they're working all these people at the same time until somebody finally comes through. So it's extremely dangerous when you're involved with a sociopath. And the other thing to keep in mind is that sociopaths target lonely people. So if you've put an ad on the Internet or on a dating profile, essentially you are advertising the fact that you are lonely and you are setting yourself up to be exploited.
Hmm. Well, in fairness, I'm just going to give my little counter argument. Actually, most of the women I've dealt with in my life who ended up being either crazy or, again, at minimum, very manipulative, were women I actually met in person. There was one or two, though, that I did meet online. Probably the last woman that I would put in that category, I did meet her online. I met her on Facebook. And
well, it's certainly possible to meet normal people online, but you have to understand that, you know, this is just a real feeding ground for sociopaths. And the way I recommend to people to proceed is that if you're going to date online, don't make it a long-distance relationship. You know, if you're going to meet someone online, limit your circle to people that you can conveniently drive to. My limit, because I actually did online dating, and I met someone who I had a very nice relationship with, you know, for almost a year. Mm-hmm. But you got to make it so that you can see the person in person, and you can see, you know, how they behave around others. And so it needs to be someone that you can conveniently drive to get together. Because what happens in a long-distance relationship is that or anything online is much of the human communication is missing. Like, experts estimate that 65% to 90% of human communication is nonverbal. That means it's body language, it's tone of voice, it's facial expressions, it's all of this. Well, when you're communicating with someone just online, 65 to 90% of the message is missing, you know, because you're not getting body language, you're not getting their tone of voice, you're not getting their facial expressions. So what happens is that people tend to fill in the blanks of what's missing by interpreting the message to mean what they want it to mean. And so what happens is when you're involved with somebody online, you're actually falling in love with your own fantasy. Oh, yeah.
I'm laughing this hard because I hate to say this. I really hate to say this, but that's my brother. I got an older brother. And a lot of times I lean on him for an objective outside viewpoint and, you know, just general wisdom. And anyway, this situation I was describing, he almost said that verbatim. After it was all over, after I had gone through basically the hell I went through, which is a two-hour story in itself, but yeah, that's what he essentially said. He said, Alan, I think in many ways you kind of had this fantasy that you were more so, you fell in love with the fantasy than the reality.
Right, right. And it's very easy to do online because so much information is missing.
Wow. You've confirmed a lot of stuff for me tonight because, like I was going to say real quickly when I was asking you earlier about asking questions, that was my first red flag with this particular person. If I had to say my first instance when I knew something wasn't right was whenever I would ask specific detailed questions about this person's past, oh, man, she would, like, flip out.
Yeah.
She didn't want me really knowing. She would give me, you know, general stuff about her past. You
right.
know, real general stuff. But anything that was really specific, particularly as it related to a past relationship, oh, man. Would flip out. Now, tell my listeners what special events you might have coming up, particularly project you might be working on, anything you want my listeners to know.
Well, actually, I've got a couple things going on. One of them is I am now starting a program to teach high school students about this personality disorder. And I'll be doing my first presentations to high school students shortly, next month. And the reason that I'm doing this is that this is what I hear from my readers all the time, the people that I talk to who've been victimized. They say, I never knew that this disorder existed. And it's like, you know, why aren't they teaching this in high school? And so I'm going to do that and to, you know, start having programs for students so that they can learn about this, you know, before they get into trouble. And I am also working on another book, which is more specific as far as Are You Dating a Sociopath? My current book, Love Fraud, is more my personal story and everything that I went through. And it does lay out in detail exactly, you know, how this manipulation took place. But it's actually, it's like a combination of a self-help book and a true crime novel. And it's quite a good read. But the next book that I'm working on will be more factual and more like the conversation that we had tonight is you know, just kind of laying out exactly, you know, what the symptoms are and what to watch out for.
Well, I really enjoyed having you as a guest. I might have to bring you on again in a few months because I've enjoyed this conversation. My chat room has enjoyed the conversation, and I've learned a lot. So listeners, definitely pick up her book, Love Fraud, Donna Anderson.
Well, thank
Anderson.
You so much. I've enjoyed it very much, and your callers were wonderful.
And continued success to you. Again, listeners, next week I will not have a show, live show, but I will be uploading a new episode of Erotic Conversationalist, and I'll be back in 2 weeks. Have a safe and enjoyable weekend. Take care.